We're in a third week of session, Senator, and a lot of this week spent, as the early part of all sessions are, in committee. One of the committees is seeing the appointees that have been made, especially over the interim, by the governor.
That's right. One of the committees that I am grateful to be serving on is the Gubernatorial Appointments Committee. I believe that's one of the most significant aspects of the Senate, is to confirm or not confirm appointees that the governor makes. We have an advice and consent role in that. The way the interim appointments are made is that when the governor makes appointments to commissions or boards in the interim, then they begin to serve immediately, subject to the consent of the Senate at the next time that we convene. If that's a special session or whatever it is, they could be brought before the Senate. But we're now back in general session, and so all those appointments that the governor made since our last meetings are before us. The criteria on that is that we have to complete all those within 30 days of reconvening. So we have a real short time fuse. The governor has appointed well over 100 appointees in the interim. The reason for that is because there were so many areas of service that either had not been filled or terms were expired. New appointments needed to be made. And so the governor has tried to do that. His wife, Sheena, has had a real interest in children and the well-being of children, adoption, those kind of areas. And so one of the areas that the governor had a lot of appointees in is in the Child Abuse and Neglect Review Boards. And there are a number of those across the state. So there were dozens of appointees made to those. And we've been hearing a lot of those. There are other commissions and committees and boards that we've also been heard, even department directors that were interim appointments, and we have to finish all those by early February. And so we've been hearing from as many as 25 or even 30 per hearing. We'll have another at least two-hour hearing next week, and again, we'll have one right after the other as we have an opportunity to hear from them, review their qualifications, and ask them questions about their service to Missouri and to Missourians. So that's been a real challenging thing to try to keep ahead of those appointments. It also has been very encouraging. The appointees that we are hearing from are almost without exception just superior Missourians that are committed to the tasks to which they've been appointed. They seem to be very well qualified. Their resumes are exceptional. I think the entire committee has been very pleased with what we've been seeing, but we still have a lot of appointees to review. If they're not reviewed, then there's a series of steps that have to be taken in order to, I guess, preserve their appointments. I won't go into that. It's a little bit dry, but that's the reason that we're hurrying as much as we can to meet that deadline.
For you, another year for the hope, anyway, of making education savings accounts a reality in Missouri.
Yes. This week in Government Reform Committee, I chaired that committee last year. This year, I was asked to chair the Commerce Committee, and so that chairmanship in Government Reform was given to Senator Caleb Rowden, who's doing a good job. We heard that bill, Senator Koenig's bill on education savings accounts. We just call them ESAs, typically, and in that hearing, Senator Koenig did a very good job explaining exactly what the bill does. It gives parents choices in the education of their children. Some 18 states have made policy changes in the realm of public education where parents do have more choices. Several of those have done ESAs similar to what we're proposing in Missouri. I'm a big supporter of that. I filed the bill, almost identical bill, last year. I filed another bill this year, although I think it has probably gone to the Education Committee instead of the Government Reform Committee. But we had excellent testimony and support of how this ESA program would work out for students, and heard from parents as well as from some of those folks who operate schools that might receive some students if parents feel like their children could be better educated there. It uses a portion of the money, the per student money that goes to the schools. So the schools actually gain financially in terms of per pupil money with this program. It currently has a cap of about $50 million in terms of tax credits. It would be funded by tax credits. We have something in Missouri called the Blaine Amendment, which has an interesting history. I won't go into the history. Listeners might want to Google that and kind of check the history of that Blaine Amendment out. A little disappointing history, but pretty interesting. In order to survive the Constitution, it's important to finance this with tax credits. That's the way the bill's designed. It's administered by the treasurer, who already manages scholarships and other things in the education field, so he's very comfortable with that. I'm encouraged with the testimony. The big conflict that we heard, I guess, in opposition testimony is really the competition between the health of the institution versus the well-being of the student. I'm going to have to come down on the side of the student, I guess, every time. the purpose of education isn't to build strong institutions. It's to build strong men and women, young men and young women, and to prepare them to fully exploit the talents and abilities and skills that God has gifted them with and when He created them. I'm pleased that if we can get all parties to come back to that point as our objective, it seems like some of our differences dissolve and we're able to work together. So I'm hoping that we'll see that bill this year progress further and maybe open some real opportunities for parents who have desires for their students that are a little different than what they're getting in just the school that they've been assigned to by their zip code.
As we move forward with these committees, now the first legislation from these committees is on its way to the floor for full debate. That includes Senate Bill 564 for you, which is the Utilities Regulation Bill.
That's right. We're looking forward to turning that bill in today. We voted it out of committee Wednesday with a 9-1 vote. That we have a lot of work to do. We heard things in the hearing that we will have to address, and so there will be changes made to the bill before it's actually brought up on the floor. We'll call that a floor substitute. We will work to address those issues, and then if there are further issues that come out in floor debate, we'll obviously try to work on those and arrive at the compromises that it takes. Our infrastructure in Missouri, our utility infrastructure, particularly in the electricity area, is very, very old. St. Louis is particularly affected by that old infrastructure, but it's true across the state, and our regulatory environment is nearly 100 years old. The kinds of issues that were before us 100 years ago, as you can imagine, are significantly different than they are today. A large number of senators and a large number of representatives are convinced that there are things we need to do in order to modernize our grid in Missouri, all the way from substations to meters to the towers that we hang our electric lines on. And there's new technology there that can really be a benefit to consumers. The question there is whether the regulatory environment fosters or even allows some of those improvements to be made in a real time frame. With the current regulatory environment, it could take us 40 or 50 years to implement today's technology, and then it won't be today's technology 40 or 50 years from now. So we're looking at ways to accelerate that. 564 is the bill that will do that, and as soon as we can get that thing ready, we're going to have it up on the floor. Could have it as early as sometime next week to debate on the floor.